Well, good day and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's always fantastic to have you all joining us. This particular episode is going to be a recorded segment that our co-host Sam Bradley did while at EMS Today in Baltimore recently. And this is with Mad Dog Medic, who goes by that moniker because he works as a paramedic in the Middle East and wants to make sure that he protects his identity when doing any kind of social media outreach and things like that to protect his employers and his job. But he's going to talk a little bit about disaster response and multi-casualty events that he's handled while working as a paramedic in the Middle East. And it's a great discussion, and we want to thank Sam for pulling him in to do this episode, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Also, I want to thank our sponsors, Paragon Medical Education Group, who sponsored the Disaster Podcast. Look them up over at paragonmedicalgroup.com. or over on Twitter at ParagonMedEDU, and of course their Facebook page as well. We want to thank them for their continued support, and also Physio Control, where we were using their booth space to do these interviews at EMS Today, and we want to thank them for making that space available. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into this segment with Sam and Mad Dog Medic.
Good morning from the Physio Control booth here at EMS Today 2016. We're doing this live, so you'll enjoy the ambiance around us. We love doing the live disaster podcast, and we've done several others. So if you might want to catch the Medicast discussion that Jamie just had with Mad Dog Medic here, where they talk a little bit about what it's like to be a medic in Saudi Arabia. So we don't want to repeat that whole segment, but give them a little taste of that.
Well, I work in the Middle East, and I've been there for 6 years, and I work as a paramedic, just like I do here, did in the United States. So there's a lot of similarities, a lot of differences, but one of the things that's very different in the Middle East is how the community and the rescuers and public safety personnel respond to disasters. And I include the community because that's a big factor in it. In the past year, I have been involved in response to a massive apartment fire with over 200 patients.
Wow.
And several terrorist attacks on local mosques and some fires and incidents involving weddings and vehicular crashes. And we can have an MCI or a disaster when a bus full with 75 Pakistani workers rolls 6 or 7 times on the highway. Suddenly,
that's a problem.
It's a disaster. Yeah. So it's very different. We run into a lot of challenges. The EMS system there is fragmented. I work for an EMS system that's run by an oil company. But also there's Red Crescent Society, the government-funded EMS system. And every hospital has their own EMS response. And where people are transported and what treatment they receive is based on their insurance. So it's not a unified emergency.
So there isn't like a trauma system per se?
They have a few trauma centers where people can go, but some people get refused to go to there because they don't have the insurance. Or and they don't have really any kind of EMTALA laws on the books there. So that can be a challenge. But, for example, we had a large apartment fire, and the apartment was residents, the apartment residents were employees of my company, so we were obliged to respond, and we did. But also, the Air Force came because people were escaping up to a roof and using a helicopter to pluck people off, and then some of our company helicopters joined in that, and then the Civil Defense, which are the fire department, came, and they were trying to get people, evacuate people from the building, and then our security personnel were there, as well as the National Guard and the police.
Good grief.
There was absolutely no communication.
Well, that was my next question. What is that interoperability like?
It's a challenge because there's not most of the communication that happens other than face-to-face happens on mobile phones. In fact, I was providing logistics from our base facility, and we were not able to get radio communications. The noise, the helicopters, no landing zone was established for the helicopters, so they were just dropping right down on the dust next to our treatment tents. And so my friend who was on the scene was texting me lists of stuff that he needed, and I was loading equipment and sending it out. And thank goodness for a robust mobile phone system. That's how we communicated. So that's an example of one of the communication challenges. The other communication challenge is my friend who was on the scene, he's American. He doesn't speak Arabic. And he was attempting to interface with some of the other providers there who don't speak English.
Oh,
so
nice.
So we have another challenge there. But before we even get to the point where people are responding, because some order did occur, you know, the fire department saw that there was a medical treatment area and they were evacuating patients. But we learn, and my company, we operate on an IMS-based disaster management model. And it's based on that, you know, and as we all know.
I was going to ask about that, if they have
like
any form of ICS that everybody uses or just your company.
Well, that's the thing, not everybody uses it. Our company uses it, but not everybody else does, and they may not respect triage. So when you have a disaster, whether it's a car accident or fire or an attack on a mosque with multiple patients, typically patients are transported by bystanders. They throw people in the car and bring them to the nearest hospital, or they bring them to the hospital that they think is the best. So we'll be triaging people on scene, but we also have learned to establish a triage area outside the doors of our hospital so we can triage people as they come in.
That makes sense.
So with the apartment fire, one of the things I was doing was going out in the parking lot, and as a huge bus came in, walking through the thing and tagging people green, yellow, red, blep, blep, all the way down. So, you know, we had to do another triage system. It's further exacerbated by, there seems to be, I've detected, a kind of a sense of urgency and panic amongst people when they see blood and when they see disasters like this. So I'll have someone, I'll be trying to treat somebody or triage somebody who's a red or a yellow, and then I'll have this family bring in this, you know, patient with injuries incompatible with life. I would have tagged them black, and pushing everyone out of the way and insisting that we treat them first. So we've had incidents like that happen, and we get security or the police involved. But if the family of this dead person and the dead person are of the same tribe as that security member or that policeman.
Oh, boy, yeah.
So I love working as a paramedic because being a paramedic is basically solving problems all the time, and interesting problems if you're lucky. And working in the Middle East and working when we have disaster situations, the problems get really interesting.
Well, but it sounds like you have a good grasp of the culture and of some of the things you know that you're going to expect. So when you were in this more or less operations command role, did you just choose to do that because you knew it needed to be done?
Yeah, I did. We had a command structure set up, and we had an emergency response center, and we had a command post, and there was some communications between them. And the command post on scene was requesting resources, and the emergency operator said it was saying, okay, but not doing anything about it. And so I said, all right, I just kind of slotted in. You know, I'm not one of those people who gets up and says, we should all do this and everybody should listen to me. I was like, see something needs doing, get it done.
Exactly.
And fortunately, my colleagues, both Western and local, are, you know, pretty sharp. And many of my colleagues are doing the same thing. And we kind of got together because, you know, we've all been kind of trained in the IMS system. We're like, all right, let's kind of get our own de facto set up here and establish our lines of communication to the various people.
So you have enough people that may have learned ICS or IMS, as you put it, in this country that you knew that would kind of get how that worked?
And that system is being pushed out to the other countries in the Middle East because a lot of them are modeling their response systems off of, you know, what has worked before historically. They're hiring people from the West to come educate and develop and establish systems. I think I talked about that in my podcast with Jamie about, you know, working over there. So there's hope and there's changes that are happening, but there's some pretty substantial cultural barriers to smoothly implementing an IMS system where we, you know, just calmly and competently manage, you know, disasters, because there's also that, you know, I'm really important right now, so I'm going to go directly to the source, you know, and I've seen incident commanders who are surrounded by 30 people, everybody yelling at once.
Yeah, we deal with that too, to some extent. But
it's,
I mean, as a medic, you know, we're so focused on there's your patient, and how often have you been in the middle of this huge chaotic mess and you only know what's happening in front of you? To be able to pull back and look at that 10,000 foot view and say, okay, this isn't talking to that, and we need this over here. I applaud you for having the wherewithal to look at that because you knew it needed to be done.
Well, thank you. I argue that it's nothing special in me. It's very similar to how we would work as a paramedic. So as a paramedic, you have someone with chest pain. You don't sit there and stare at the monitor. You look at the whole patient. You back out. You take a 5,000-foot view. You know, is he sweaty?
Yeah.
Is having this? Is he having this? And so apply that same model, just like you would apply the incident management system simple structure on an 11-patient car wreck, and pull it out. And so, like I said, we solve interesting problems. And that's what we do. And algorithmic thinking and flexible thinking are important to being a good paramedic.
Critical.
Apply the same principles by backing out and looking at the whole problem. So my patient is an organism made up of lots of people and a situation and factors that I have to deal with.
So you say you deal with bombings at mosques and so forth, so there's that element of terrorism.
Yes.
Are you concerned with like secondary IEDs or anything like that as a part of that?
Always concerned.
We would here.
I'm always concerned with that, and my situational awareness is definitely ramped up on a daily basis. However, the nature of these attacks have been specific. Daesh, which is what the Arabs call and the locals call, what we call ISIS or ISIL. They are recruiting young men in these countries to go with a bomb belt and a gun and attack specifically Shia mosques in the area.
Oh.
And so they're going in with a targeted program, and the Shia mosques are responding by setting up better security. Like the most recent attack, two men came in to attack the mosque. They wanted to enter the mosque and then detonate, or enter the mosque, shoot, and then detonate. But the security stopped them. You know, it's like a community prayer area. So they're like, I don't know you. You can't come in. So the first guy panicked and detonated his belt. And the second guy's belt failed to detonate. And then...
Wow.
Yeah, and then there was a running gun battle after that. Now, the first detonation killed two people, the bomber and one other person. And then I think four or five other people were killed in the subsequent gun battle. And the second assailant was wounded and taken alive. We didn't go to that scene. Because by the time everything had shaken out, everybody had been driven in personal cars to hospitals all over the place.
Well, I find that interesting because in a conversation last night, you were saying that that's what they typically do. If there's an IED or something, they run in, grab people, and take them to the hospital.
Yep.
In our country, most people will run away for fear of whatever else is going to happen and their own safety. So I find it interesting that they even do that in that culture.
Yeah, it's a question of whether you call it bravery or stupidity. But the thing is that no matter what the situation is or how culturally different it are, these people care about their neighbors and their friends.
That's
and
good.
So they see something like that and they're like, oh my gosh, we have to get them. We have to help them. And they don't know how to help them. You know, a lot of times when I'm loading a patient in the ambulance and the family's there, they're grabbing the cot because they want to help. And I'm like, please.
could be a problem.
You're going to get me in trouble for hurting a patient. You know, it's going to fall over. But yeah, that's just that, you know, they want to do something. They want to help. So
sure. Sometimes
we'll go into disaster mode, but at the doors of the hospital.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, because then we've got to, you know, manage and triage our patients, and then, you know,
you don't want everybody
decon
in the ER. We've had that situation like with earthquakes in California, where I used to live, where you don't want everyone in the ER. You want to separate. In fact, one of our hospitals had it was a teaching hospital, mm-hmm. so they had a place where they just had residents, and they sent the mediums and minors and the yellows, you know, up there to make sure that the ER wasn't going to get inundated with people that didn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes perfect sense to do that.
We have this kind of similar setup at our hospital, but still, sometimes people just try to, you know, just try to rush in.
But reflecting on your conversation with Jamie, if I wanted to consider a job in Saudi Arabia or somewhere in the Middle East, could you say with relative certainty that you feel safe there?
Yes. I've been there 6 years. I intend to be there probably 5 or 6 more. I feel safer most times where I live and work than I do when I'm in the United States. You know, as I said on Jamie's podcast, there's less of a culture of personal, intentional, physical violence. People yell and argue, but they don't beat each other up very much. And then, like I said, these attacks are focused specifically on a subset of the population that are local.
Right.
Also, these host countries, you know, the Emirates and Oman and Bahrain and Qatar and Saudi Arabia, they take very good care of their expats. So the amount of security surrounding me where I live and work is pretty high, and it's multi-levels. So that makes me feel better. And, you know, and I'm involved in a planning and management committee, so we do drills. I'm actually getting tabletop exercises.
That's excellent.
To be a regular
excellent
thing. And, you know, I have to explain to these guys, it's just a game. Pretend like it's a game. Oh, okay. So
they're open to that.
They are. There is to a degree. It's being championed by some people with enough influence, or as they say in the Middle East, wasta, to get other people on board, to get the stakeholders on board. But typically, the culture there is, you know, you don't want to be seen as anything but the best. So we don't do evaluations as much. We don't do, know, they say we do drills over there. We frequently do exercises because they're announced and they're planned, and everybody is more concerned with making sure they do everything on time and perfectly than reevaluating their performance and saying, how can we improve this process?
So constructive criticism might need to be treated a little differently.
I have learned to be so much more eloquent than saying, hey, you messed that up. No, it's like, well,
maybe
you know, your effort, but I believe you can be better, and you can do it better, and you deserve to do it better. Yes, yeah, that sort of thing.
Yes, because you're wonderful.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. And again, it's another interesting problem to solve.
So what is it you really like about being over there that's very different than here?
Well, right now the weather, it's beautiful, 72 degrees and sunny.
At the time of this broadcast, they've had 65 tornadoes around the country, so that's kind of what he's referring to.
I like the weather during the winter. It's very hot in the summer. But I think what I like is that I'm in a location where it's very easy for me to go to Africa, to Europe, to Asia, to Polynesia. And I really like that in my neighborhood, I've got myself. And my next-door neighbor is an Egyptian. Their next-door neighbor is a Syrian and Venezuelan couple, and then another Americans, and
then
a Canadian who married a Korean, and then I got the couple from Bangkok across the way, the Ethiopians on the other side of the playground.
Talk about diversity.
Yeah, so the parties are great. And the food is fantastic.
You get a
little bit of everything. So I think that's the thing I like the most, is the fact that I am not surrounded by a homogenous group of people who think exactly
not
like
even
I
close.
Do, you know?
Do you get natural disasters there besides Haboobs?
We do. We get Shamals, big desert masses of dust and sand that come down and
blow
across here.
Don't they call those Haboobs?
We call them Shamal. Yeah, Shamal is a desert sandstorm.
You just hunker down when one of those comes through.
Yeah. And we get heavy fog around this time of year, which isn't really disastrous unless you combine the way the locals drive.
Yes, we talked about that.
And they're like,
earlier.
Oh, we'll just drive right through the fog. And then smash, boom. But natural disasters, not so much. We're not really prone to earthquakes. We're not really prone to hurricanes. Though, you know, as a result of changes in the climate, there was a typhoon that touched on the southern Arabian Peninsula last year, the first time in 75 years. Massive amount of damage while everybody's at war down there. So
that was a surprise.
And you will notice that I did not recommend Yemen as a country to work in. Yeah, they're busy killing each other over there. So
probably not a good idea.
So yeah, we don't deal a lot with the natural disasters. Most of the disasters that we deal with are usually manufactured or man-made, fires, accidents, and of course there's a huge oil industry there. So
yes,
not following safety regulations, explosions. I went into disaster mode, but only had one patient with minor injuries for a fire on a natural gas line that burned steadily for 96 hours to drain 30 kilometers of pipe. And the plume was half a kilometer high. It was pretty awesome.
Must have been fun to watch.
It was.
So it is hot there, though. It is the desert.
Yeah, it does get hot. And especially in the summertime, depending on where you are, you'll get temperatures up to 120, 130 degrees Fahrenheit. Closer to the Arabian Gulf, which is where I live in the eastern side, we also get really high humidity because a lot of that water evaporates off the Gulf. And
that's rough.
So I prefer to take my vacation in the summer.
Yes, I can see that. So what other kinds of MCIs? You talked about the fires, of course.
Yeah.
And
I think the biggest MCIs,
terrorism.
Yeah, the most dramatic ones, the most attention-getting ones are the terrorist-related, but the most common ones are motor vehicle accidents. I ran an MCI where it was a Toyota Prado, so it's about the size of a mid-size SUV that had 11 Bangladeshis in it.
Oh, my God.
And it rolled eight times.
They must have been small.
They were, and they were like, I think, one acted as an airbag for two, and there was some pretty substantial injuries. And
they don't wear seatbelts over there, right?
No, they don't. Okay. And we had...
See? There's a point to be made there.
We had 45 minutes time to get to scene, and it was summertime. And they had rolled into an area near the sea, so we had to walk through about thigh-deep wet sand to get to the vehicle.
Oh, my.
And we had to extract. And, of course, because of the weird nature, we didn't have any civil defense or fire department, didn't have a rescue squad, didn't have additional personnel. It was just me and my local colleague. And, fortunately, he's really strong, and the sand was soft, and we were actually able to pull the guy out from underneath the car.
Underneath the car.
Yeah, it was just the two of us.
And must have been a bit warm in there with 11 people.
It was very warm, so that's an example of the incident. And we, the security there just told all the walking wounded to get in my ambulance. We're the only unit there. So I get in there, and I've got seven people in my ambulance, and I've got two patients I want to transport.
Oh, my.
And so I was literally pulling people out and then waiting for other resources to show up to take care of them. So, again, it's like, okay, I'm in MCI mode, but I don't have my command structure. So let me pull back a little bit and prioritize what I can do. So
sounds like you always have complete control. You just got to go with the flow.
You just got to surf the chaos, man.
I could sit here and talk to you all day, but I think Jamie's going to give me the evil eye here because I'm sure we have other people scheduled.
I think we do.
So,
well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
I wish I could see you more than every once or
that's
twice
probably why you like
every
me.
2 years.
Because you don't see me enough.
We love you, Mad Dog.
Thank you
very
much.
One of my favorite people.
Thanks.
So, I know your social media presence is minimal for obvious reasons, but is there some way people could communicate with you?
You can follow me and message me on Twitter. I am the Mad Dog Medic, one word. And it's MADDOGMEDIC. Did I spell that right? Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's the best way to reach me because my Facebook account was shut down because I don't use my real name. And I have shuttered my web blog for now until I kind of get a better idea how to
run it
for more safety.
You have to do what feels right. Yeah.
Gotta be careful.
You don't want to get yourself in trouble.
Right. I like this job. I don't want to lose it.
Exactly. It sounds like it's an awesome job. It sounds like it provides you with a lot of challenges.
It does.
More than we have here, but you understand those challenges.
Yeah.
I imagine it was really tough in the beginning getting a sense of all of that, the language barrier, the social structure, and all of that.
Yeah, it was. Fortunately, I'm paired with, you know, often working with a local colleague who was educated in the U.S. or in the West and has very good language skills. We can interpret, and, you know, and they work on teaching me, you know, how to speak and how to, you know, figure out the nuances and subtleties. You know, I learned not to say, "What's up, dude?" because dude is worm in Arabic.
Well,
and you don't say, "Hey, what's up, my dog?" because you never call a man a dog in the Middle East.
Yeah, that probably
so I'm just like, "My brother." I'm like, "Hey!"
So do you, other Americans come into your domain, then, you know, you're in a good position to kind of train them and what you've learned.
And we, you know, and I also speak Spanish. So I've actually stood with an Egyptian doctor and a Mexican patient and kind of translated through. And
you are a talented guy, you know that? And you're good looking, too.
Keep that up. We're going to have to turn the cameras off.
Well, I guess that's a good place to end this. You can find me at SamBradley11 or Sam Bradley in the usual social media places, and certainly at thedisasterpodcast.com. We'd love for you to come up and give us some comments, and I'm sure Mad Dog would give you a response if you were to ask him a question. And let us know what you want us to talk about. We found out in the year and a half or however long we've been doing this, every time we think we might run out of subject matter, there's always something that we haven't covered. So, you know, we'd love to hear what you want to talk about. So, disasterpodcast.com. Again, we're here at the EMS Today 2016 in the physio control booth. And we really appreciate them giving us a place to do this. So, Mad Dog, I guess we'll see you next year, maybe?
Maybe.
If we're here in Baltimore?
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And that's going to wrap up this episode here of the Disaster Podcast. And again, thank you to Mad Dog Medic for coming over and chatting with Sam and the physio control booth at EMS Today in Baltimore this past year. And we also want to thank all of you for checking out this show. Remember, we want you to leave comments. So leave a comment in the show notes for this episode over at disasterpodcast.com. And of course, always reach out and let us know what you like about an episode, what you might have questions about from an episode, or if there's something you want to have us do in a future episode, we'd love to hear from you. So head over to disasterpodcast.com. Also, a special thank you to both Physio Control and Paragon Medical Education Group. Paragon, of course, is the longtime sponsor here of the Disaster Podcast. We couldn't do this show without them. So make sure you check out what they have going on in the way of specialized resources and training to help you be better prepared for those disaster events that may occur in your communities. You'll find all of that available for you to check out on their brand new website over at ParagonMedicalGroup.com. And again, thank you to the guys over at Paragon Medical Group for doing all they do to help support the EMS and response community and for their help and help and assistance here at the Disaster Podcast. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. We'll be back with another episode again next week here at the Disaster Podcast. In the meantime, make sure you check out all our back episodes. We have some great topics that we cover there over at disasterpodcast.com. And in the meantime, I'll just remind you, as Sam does every week, that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.